This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy met Wednesday with Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen in California, calling her a great friend to America. At the start of their meeting, McCarthy said, "I am optimistic we will continue to find ways for the people of America and Taiwan to work together to promote economic freedom, democracy, peace, and stability." Tsai responded, "We are stronger when we work together." But she also had a warning.
"The peace that we have maintained and the democracy which have worked hard to build are facing unprecedented challenges."
She said the military threat from China, which claims Taiwan as part of its territory, cannot be understated. McCarthy said the United States must continue its arms sales to Taiwan. Former U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday called on his fellow Republicans in Congress to slash funding for the U.S. Justice Department and the FBI one day after pleading not guilty in New York City to 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. Trump took aim at federal law enforcement authorities, even though the criminal charges against him were brought by the Manhattan District Attorney. He wrote on his social media platform Wednesday, "Republicans in Congress should defund the DOJ and FBI until they come to their senses." The DOJ refers to the U.S. Department of Justice. The FBI, part of the Justice Department, is the U.S. Domestic Intelligence and Security Agency. The current head of the FBI is a Trump appointee. A spokeswoman for Mike Pence says the former U.S. vice president will not appeal a judge's ruling that requires him to testify to a grand jury about conversations he had with former President Trump leading up to the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. In a March ruling, the judge also said Pence can still decline to answer questions related to January 6. This is VOA News. Pence spokesman Devin O'Malley said in a statement on Wednesday that Pence's argument that the subpoena violated the U.S. Constitution's speech or debate clause had been vindicated by the court. Local police in Brazil say at least four children were killed when a 25-year-old man armed with a small axe attacked a preschool on Wednesday. Reuters' Olivia Zelino has more.
Outside a preschool in Blumenau, in southern Brazil, parents consoled each other after a fatal attack at the school. Police allege a 25-year-old man wielding an axe gained access to the private school by scaling its walls. He has since been arrested. Among the victims are three boys and a girl between the ages of 5 and 7. President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva described the attack as a monstrosity on social media. Community members living near the preschool came to lay flowers and pay their respects to the young victims. The attack comes nearly a week after a 13-year-old student stabbed a teacher to death and injured five others in Sao Paulo.
That was Olivia Zelino reporting for Reuters. Ukraine is training 8 new brigades, totaling 40,000 soldiers that it wants to use during a counteroffensive against Russian occupiers in the coming weeks or months. Their success may determine the fate of the war. Reuters correspondent Edward Baran reports.
More than a year into Russia's full-scale invasion, Alex, a translator with no military experience, is training to ambush enemy forces in one of Ukraine's newest military units in a secret location. He's part of the Border of Steel, the name of one of 8 new storm brigades totaling 40,000 soldiers that Ukraine wants to use during its counteroffensive against Russian occupiers in coming weeks or months.
"Well, I want the war to be over."
Alex declined to give his surname for security reasons. The units have benefited from an aggressive recruiting campaign on social media and billboards with the aim of attracting highly motivated volunteers. The drive comes as Kyiv may face growing challenges recruiting new troops.
That was Reuters correspondent Edward Baran. Former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi was being treated in intensive care in a cardiac unit at Milan San Raffaele Hospital after reportedly suffering breathing problems. The 86-year-old billionaire media tycoon has suffered repeated bouts of ill health in recent years and came out of a hospital just last week. Italian Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani told reporters in Brussels that Berlusconi has an infection that has not been resolved but is able to speak. Berlusconi, who has served as prime minister 4 times, does not currently have a role in the government, although his Forza Italia party is part of Prime Minister Giorgio Meloni's right-wing coalition. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Thursday, April 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Junaid Rufo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the White House calls on China to show restraint as Taiwan's leader meets U.S. House Speaker.
When you look at this transit that the president of Taiwan is doing, this is something that's been part of a long tradition, of a long U.S. tradition. And so, again, we just do not see, there should not be a reason for the PCR to overreact here.
NATO pledges to beef up defense and support Ukraine as the war grinds on.
We will discuss defense spending in a contested and dangerous world. We cannot take our security for granted, so we must invest more in our defense.
And more reactions from the historic indictment of former U.S. President Donald Trump. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy met Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen in California on Wednesday. He's the most senior U.S. figure to meet a Taiwanese leader on U.S. soil since 1979, despite threats of retaliation from China, which claims self-ruled Taiwan as its own. Both discussed a sense of mutual support and cooperation in their statements. Tsai thanked the U.S. Congress for standing by Taiwan when democracy was under threat.
Their presence and unwavering support reassure the people of Taiwan that we are not isolated. We are not alone. However, it is no secret that today, the peace that we have maintained and the democracy which have worked hard to build are facing unprecedented challenges. In a discussion with congressional leaders this morning, I reiterated Taiwan's commitment to defending the peaceful status quo. I also highlighted a belief which President Reagan championed, that to preserve peace, we must be strong. I would like to add that we are stronger when we are together. Taiwan strives to be a reliable partner to the world, a cornerstone for stability in the region. In our efforts to protect our way of life, Taiwan is grateful to have the United States of America by our side. Thank you to all our friends in Congress for standing by Taiwan.
That's Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen. White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre said on Wednesday that the United States has been consistent on its messaging on urging China to show restraint regarding Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen's visit with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. China staged war games around Taiwan late August following the visit to Taipei of the then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and Taiwan's Defense Ministry said a Chinese aircraft carrier group was in the waters of the island's southeast coast ahead of the meeting between Tsai and McCarthy in California.
We have said there is no reason for Beijing to turn this transit into something that is used as a pretext to overreact. We've been very clear about that. This is something, when you look at this transit that the president of Taiwan is doing, this is something that's been part of a long tradition, a long U.S. tradition. And so, again, we just do not see, there should not be a reason for the PCR to overreact here. Our channels of communications are open, and we have had a consistent message that has urged restraint. And in recent days, we have conveyed directly to the Chinese at high levels that escalation is uncalled for. And so we'll continue to keep those channels of conversations open.
That's White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre. The indictment of former U.S. President Donald Trump Tuesday was the major news globally, and the Korean Peninsula was no exception. Trump was charged with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in a historic case of allegations he orchestrated hush money payments to two women before the 2016 U.S. election to suppress publication of their sexual encounters with him. South Koreans, like the rest of the world, watched as Trump became the first sitting or former U.S. president to face criminal charges. For more, I spoke with VOA Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo.
South Koreans are very used to this general thing happening in their country. Of course, they've never seen this happen before in the United States. As you mentioned, it's very unprecedented. And I think that a lot of South Koreans, to the extent that they follow U.S. issues, political issues, are very shocked and concerned about the political chaos that's happening in the U.S. I mean, this is a country that is largely responsible for the security of South Korea. And to see sort of this U.S. political turbulence and, frankly, chaos play out over the last several years, it has been very concerning. It has led to many South Koreans taking steps such as saying, maybe we should get our own nuclear weapons to protect ourselves, in large part because of sort of the chaos that is happening in the U.S. In some ways, it's very concerning. In some ways, also just expected, and sort of people are reacting based on that. The regional react is similar in many ways, in that people are concerned about the chaos in the U.S. and what that means for U.S. leadership in the region moving forward.
Like you pointed out, South Korea is a country that is used to putting their leaders on trial, but it's almost a somber affair. In Manhattan yesterday, it was almost like a carnival, sometimes almost like a television show. Were they shocked about that, or they just expected that from the United States?
The Trump years were, I guess, in some ways traumatic for South Korea, in large part because Donald Trump, before he was president, during his presidency, and even after his presidency, just liked to talk very negatively about South Korea in terms of South Korea being a freeloader, you know, relying on U.S. protection but not paying enough money. And so I think South Koreans were sort of used to the drama as it relates to Donald Trump. It is shocking, you know, every few months another example of sort of this political chaos come to the forefront. And yeah, the dramatic nature of it, the circus nature of it, is shocking. I'm not sure how much of that actually gets through translation sometimes. South Korean news outlets will cover this in a certain way. And I think it's funny, when I watch South Korean news outlets, it looks relatively dignified compared to the way it looks on American television. So I'm not sure that all of that sort of chaotic nature gets communicated, but certainly some of it does. And it is concerning to many South Koreans.
That's VOA Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo speaking with me from the South Korean capital. NATO members will have to invest at least 2% of their GDP in defense in the near future, Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said as he opened the second day of his summit in Brussels. At their Wales summit in 2014, NATO leaders already agreed to move towards spending at least 2% of their gross domestic product on defense within a decade. NATO's decision was a reaction to what it perceived as a severely deteriorated security situation in Europe, months after Russia's annexation of the Ukrainian peninsula Crimea. Almost 10 years after the Wales pledge, and 1 year into Russia's invasion of Ukraine, NATO defense ministers will resume their discussion on how to adapt the spending target during the meeting. Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
We will discuss defense spending in a contested and dangerous world. We cannot take our security for granted, so we must invest more in our defense. At the Vilnius summit, I expect allies to agree an ambitious new defense investment pledge, with 2% of GDP as a minimum to be invested in defense.
That's NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. Ukraine is training 8 new brigades totaling 40,000 soldiers that it wants to use during a counteroffensive against Russian occupiers in coming weeks or months. Their success may determine the fate of the war. Alex, a translator with no prior military experience, is one of them. Edward Buran of Reuters reports.
More than a year into Russia's full-scale invasion, Alex, a translator with no military experience, is training to ambush enemy forces in one of Ukraine's newest military units in a secret location. He's part of the Border of Steel, the name of one of 8 new storm brigades totaling 40,000 soldiers that Ukraine wants to use during its counteroffensive against Russian occupiers in coming weeks or months.
Well, I want the war to be over as soon as possible, and I hope that the strike brigade will make it a lot faster. So I want to be more effective. That's why I chose it.
Alex declined to give his surname for security reasons. The units have benefited from an aggressive recruiting campaign on social media and billboards with the aim of attracting highly motivated volunteers. The drive comes as Kyiv may face growing challenges recruiting new troops. Its forces have been weathering a Russian onslaught for months in towns like Bakhmut in the east, where thousands of soldiers have died. Kyiv does not disclose its military losses. The new brigades are not part of the army. They're drafted by the Interior Ministry and will fight alongside regular army units bolstered by new Western battle tanks and thousands of fresh troops trained by allied armies outside Ukraine. Interior Minister Ihor Klimenko.
We have a large mobilization potential and a huge human and patriotic potential in our country. This includes women too.
Border of Steel is commanded by Valery Paditel, who led Ukraine's border guard forces in the defense of now-occupied Mariupol, where he was captured and later freed in a prisoner swap.
We will keep training. We will train all the time while the brigade is being formed and while we are waiting for battle orders. We will be deployed when required, when the military leadership decides, when we will be told that our time has come, that we need to perform tasks given to us.
A great deal is riding on the counteroffensive for Ukraine. A bungled and bloody attempt to seize back territory from Russian forces could dim optimism among key Western backers and push them to encourage Ukraine to seek negotiations with Moscow. Russian forces still occupy tracts of the east, the strategically important south, and the Crimean Peninsula.
That's Edward Baran of Reuters, and Israeli police entered Jerusalem Al-Aqsa Mosque in force before dawn on Wednesday and clashed with worshippers, drawing condemnation from Arab countries, a furious reaction in the occupied West Bank, and cross-border strikes in Gaza. Lucy Field of Reuters has more.
An Israeli police raid on Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque has sparked fury among Palestinians and condemnation across the Arab world, as well as cross-border strikes in Gaza and fears of yet another escalation. Witnesses said police beat worshippers and fired rubber-tipped bullets before dawn on Wednesday. The clashes come during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, when it's common for crowds to spend the night at the mosque, and also on the eve of the Jewish Passover. Under a long-standing status quo arrangement governing the area, only Muslims are allowed to worship at Al-Aqsa. But Jewish visitors have increasingly prayed more or less openly at the compound, known to Jews as the Temple Mount. The third holiest site in Islam, Al-Aqsa saw clashes that set off war in 2021 between Israel and Palestinian militants in Gaza. At least 9 rockets were fired from Gaza overnight, prompting Israeli airstrikes on Wednesday on what it said were Hamas weapons production sites. Witnesses said Israeli tanks also shelled Hamas positions along the border fence in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. Hamas spokesman Hazem Qasim said the Palestinians would not let the incident pass.
What happened in Al-Aqsa Mosque, the Israeli forces' assaults on the worshippers, is a crime and is a violation of all human rights and laws, and the occupation should be held responsible for it and for its repercussions. Because our people will not let this pass without a response to the terrorizing of the worshippers, worshippers who were safe in the house of God.
The Palestinian Red Crescent said 12 Palestinians were wounded at Al-Aqsa, and Israeli forces were preventing its medics from reaching the area. Israeli police said in a statement masked agitators locked themselves inside the mosque with fireworks, sticks and stones, forcing security units to enter the compound. 2 police officers were wounded and more than 350 people who had barricaded themselves inside were arrested and removed, the police said. The incident drew a sharp reaction from Arab countries, including Jordan and Egypt, which are both involved in recent US-backed efforts to de-escalate tensions between Israel and the Palestinians.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. In other news, a man with a small axe burst into a daycare center in Brazil, killing 4 children and wounding at least 4 others. Authorities said Wednesday that the assailant jumped over one of the center's walls to get inside. The dead were between the ages of 5 and 7. The man turned himself in at a police station and did not appear to have any connection with the school. Police were searching for a motive. Image broadcast on networks showed weeping parents outside a private daycare center called Cotinho do Bom Pastor in the city of Blumenau. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Cyclone Freddy killed hundreds of people in February and March as it pummeled Madagascar, Malawi and Mozambique. While the long-running storm's victims were mostly Malawi, floodwaters in Mozambique have created a fresh threat there from cholera. Cases have nearly doubled in 1 week to 19,000 amid a shortage of facilities, many of which were badly damaged by the cyclone, especially in the worst-hit province of Zambezi. Tom Gould reports from Zambezi's capital, Kwamalime, in Mozambique.
The neighborhood of Isidwa, on the outskirts of Kelemani City in Mozambique's central Zambezi province, has reported the highest number of cholera cases. Most here lived in flimsy huts made of mud or bamboo that were flattened by the cyclone's up to 215 kilometer per hour winds. The local health center's building is no longer stable, so doctors and nurses work outside under the shade of trees. Mothers lined up patiently this week with their children for cholera treatment in one of the few wards that survived the storm. José da Costa Silva is the clinic's director. He says the staff are working at high risk as the roof could collapse at any minute. Cholera cases are increasing, says Silva, and the health center does not have the capacity to treat everyone. He says most patients are referred to the provincial hospital. The outbreak is not confined to Quelimane City. The UN says more than 19,000 cases have been confirmed across 8 of Mozambique's 11 provinces. The World Health Organization's office has called it the worst cholera outbreak in Mozambique for 20 years. At Quelimane Provincial Hospital, the Director General of Mozambique's National Health Institute this week addressed health workers in a packed room under a torn roof with two gaping holes. Eduardo Sangulo Jr. tells the workers the cholera outbreak is getting more serious by the day. Confirmed cases in Quelimane district alone have reached about 600 a day, he says, but the real number could be as high as 1,000. Gudo Jr. says the disease is not localized to one neighborhood, it's everywhere. He says it can only be fought with a local chlorine water treatment product called Certeza, but supplies are stretched and there aren't enough people to distribute the bottles. Every day, volunteers collect crates of Certeza from outside the hospital and drive to neighborhoods like Isidua, where they walk from house to house distributing bottles. Each one should last a family for a week, but demand is massively outstripping supply as the cholera spreads. For many Mozambicans still recovering in the cyclone's wake, cholera is just one of many problems. Outside the village of Nicodala, about 300 people live in a makeshift camp of tarpaulin huts on a road next to a flooded field. Their villages and fields are still underwater, forcing them to fish in flooded rice paddies to survive. 64-year-old Joaquina Bissani says she had to reach the camp by canoe after her village was submerged. Cholera is less of a problem here than malaria, she says, as the damp and heat has turned these flatlands into a breeding ground for mosquitoes. Bissani says they've received no support from the government, so they're supporting each other. The World Food Programme estimates the cyclone's floodwaters destroyed 215,000 hectares of crops in Mozambique. 70-year-old farmer Inacio Abdala says his family's homes and fields were among those destroyed. He says they eat one day and don't eat the next if they lost everything in the floods. Abdala says even the schools are flooded, so their children can't go to school. Even after the floods subside, salt water brought inland by the cyclone may have damaged much of the soil. Freddy hit just before the main harvest, and officials say it will take months or even years for farmland to fully recover, long after they hope to bring the cholera outbreak under control. Tom Gould for VOA News, Quelimane, Mozambique.
This is Science in a Minute.
A pair of U.S. scientists have detected repeating radio bursts originating from YZ SETI, a star located about 12 light years from Earth. The detection has led Sebastian Panetta from the University of Colorado Boulder and Jackie Villardson of Bucknell University to find that a rocky Earth-sized exoplanet orbiting close to the radio-transmitting star may have a magnetic field like the one that surrounds and protects our planet. Radio bursts are still mysterious, but some researchers theorize that they are produced by magnetic field interactions between a star and its planets. The researchers used the Carl G. Jansky Very Large Array, a radio telescope operated by the U.S. National Science Foundation's National Radio Astronomy Observatory, to make their findings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Former President Donald Trump is the first former U.S. president ever to face criminal charges. After his indictment last week, he was arraigned on Tuesday. How will this affect Donald Trump's aspirations to be the Republican nominee in the 2024 presidential race? What impact will this case, along with several other investigations, have on the U.S. political landscape? Implications of Trump's indictment, next on Encounter on The Voice of America.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris' recent trip to Africa marked her first trip to the continent as the highest-ranking Biden administration official. This week on Our Voices, we'll take a look at the impact of the trip on the average citizen across the continent, especially women and young girls. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
Around the clock, The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and issues in the news on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Gino Dolfo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2022, President Joe Biden signed into law the CHIPS Act, whose main goal is to restore and maintain America's technological leadership. Embedded in that objective is this goal of creating globally more resilient, diversified, and secure semiconductor supply chains, explained Assistant Secretary of State for Economic and Business Affairs Ramin Tolui in a recent briefing. The need for this became especially clear during the COVID pandemic as disruptions in semiconductor supply chains had the potential to affect everything from cars to medical devices. Within the CHIPS Act, Congress appropriated $500 million over 5 years to the Department of State for the International Technology Security and Innovation Fund. State will use this fund to work with its partners and allies on 4 areas that will strengthen the resilience, diversity, and security of global semiconductor supply chains and secure global ICT ecosystems, explained Assistant Secretary Tolui.
The first area of focus is securing and diversifying the sources of critical material inputs that are needed in microchip fabrication. This is the so-called upstream component of the semiconductor supply chain. Semiconductor fabrication requires reliable access to critical minerals such as cobalt, aluminum, arsenic, copper, and rare earth elements. We want to bring new, more diverse, and resilient mining, refining and processing, and recycling capability online to supply global chip production, including in the United States.
The second area of focus is diversifying and ensuring the resilience of the assembly, testing, and packaging of microchips that's needed to take those pieces of silicon and put them in products. The third area aims to strengthen policy coordination with U.S. allies and partners. The goal is to help ensure complementarity in our respective approaches to industry incentives, as well as improve collaboration during disruptions in supply, said Assistant Secretary Tolui. The fourth area of focus on the semiconductor side is protecting national security, explained Assistant Secretary Tolui.
The goal here is to strengthen mechanisms to mitigate the risks, the national security risks that semiconductors can pose, through collaboration with our international partners on export controls and licensing policies.
Now, no single country can conduct all the essential activities in the modern semiconductor supply chain, said Assistant Secretary Tolui. Collaboration with our allies and partners is critical to realizing the ambitious goals of the CHIPS Act.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.